Okay, how many of you remember last week? We were in the 32nd chapter. We never got halfway through it. We got a few verses back on it. So I'll come back and do a little bit of things. I want to talk about the very first sentence for a moment. And it says that the people saw that Moses was delayed. Most of your translation has that word as delayed, right? And what does it really say in Hebrew? Disconnected. They figure Moses was disconnected from his people. He's gone. Let's get on with life without him. Now they had 40 days to endure this thing. But they did not know that God put them to that test, did they? Did they pass? No, they did not pass. What was their option? They either could wait or bring forth something that helps them to understand something. They knew that a great power helped them out. However, they never saw the great power, right? So they created an image to their mind which represents that great power. What was that image?
Golden calf.
Calf, okay. Why a calf? Why a bull?
That was a god in Egypt.
Okay, we'll get more clarification.
Doesn't bull mean power?
Bull means power, strength. The very first letter in the Hebrew language is a head of a calf. It's the strength, it's the power, it's the beginning of something. Beginning of. As we listen to the words of power, because we get, God help me, to get to this point today. Well, I'm going to try to explain the best I can, if we get there, what it means when we say the phrase, glory unto God. Because we have a Christian concept of glory, but we don't have what God says glory is. All right? I hope we'll get to there today. God willing. So, we have this very first thing, and they have this mark, and they wanted to make, we talk about the earrings, right? And had to do with the mark or a symbol of the tribes of each one of the families or of the tribe itself. And that's what the earring had. It was a mark. It was a symbol. And they had to take, they took it and they broke it down in order to make a calf. And then, of course, who got mad? Yeah. What do you call them? Stiff neck. What does stiff neck mean? I'm sorry, what?
They don't bow.
Is it because their neck is sore? Okay. Stiff-necked has a very significant meaning. Let me see if I can't find it real quickly. I've written it down so many times, I don't remember where I put it. Let's look at the word obstinance. But we want, in our world, we say stubborn person. Well, that's kind of what refusing to hear, refusing to submit, refusing to bow your head down to something that is greater than you. That's what the stiff-necked is all about. And Moses told God, we are a stiff-necked people. We didn't want to bow down. We didn't want to hear. We didn't want to respond. So when Moses came down, what did he do? He broke the tablets. What else? And what? Where were the people staying?
Horeb.
Not Mount Horeb. They were staying in a different area. Not too far, but it's far enough from Mount Sinai. By the way, what does Sinai mean? Thorny. Okay, we got that. Good. We got the message. It's kind of cool, isn't it? Now, on the tablets, what was written? Both sides are written on them, right? Now, I remember we have this image of a curve. We talk about the ark, right? The box. I have a hard time picturing those things being an arc, a curvature. I don't know where that concept came from. the rectangular box is where they were stayed in, right? And how were they made to stay up? Did they lay down on top of one another? Or they stand upright with one another? Or were they kind of like rectangular in shape, like everything he said to describe? What was the, you know, the temple? What, the temple. The ark was rectangular, right? The tent was rectangular. And I'm sorry, what? Outer court, rectangular. Everything was square corners. And it's kind of hard, my personal opinion, this Bible doesn't tell you what they looked like. But if they were curvature, I'm saying, that's really odd. They put them inside the ark. If they held them vertically, they had, you know, keep from falling back and forth. So they probably had, in my mind, slots or something there to hold them up so you could read what was there. And inside this ark later was put what? A bowl of manna and an Aaron's rod. We'll get to Aaron's, when we get to Aaron's rod, we'll get to Aaron's rod. They have it many years later. Well, not many years, you're a few years later. So we kind of have a picture about what it kind of looked like. And our image is that, do you think the ark was kind of, the tablet was kind of small or kind of big? They had to be kind of big to fit firmly inside. Otherwise, it's a little. He didn't need a big ark for them, right? Oh, but he needed a place to sit down, right? So he had to make it big enough for him to sit down. But the ark, you know, commandments are really insignificant, small, unimportant, and have no value, you know. Although they were written with the finger of God, but they must not have any value, right? You don't believe me? Ask our court system. Ask our school systems. Insignificant, unvalued, no value. Who cares if God wrote them or not? There, it has no value whatsoever. So I ground them into powder. What else did he do? What was the charge against Aaron? What did Moses charge Aaron with? What was Aaron supposed to be in charge of when Moses went up to the mountain?
People and worship.
Those who retain them. What does retain mean? Supposed to keep them in?
Keep them in order.
Keep them in order. Yes.
Richard, I just it's interesting that what Israel was doing while Moses was up the mountain, they were committing adultery. When Moses ground up and made them drink it, it's the same punishment, isn't it, for the woman who's suspected of adultery. She's made to drink.
The difference being is one ingredient wasn't there when the woman did it.
Right, I know. But
why gold?
Well, it's the very thing they'd been worshipping idols with it. They'd actually made it into an idol, but God sees it as adultery.
All the gold is mine, saith the Lord. Why did Moses do this? Why didn't he just crush it, smash it down, and made me dirt?
That was the opposite of their worship. Their idol.
I didn't have it. I was just going to comment, when the woman had to drink, they took of the dust in the
temple.
In the temple.
Or in this case, the tabernacle.
Man comes from dust, and the gold came from what is God's.
Gold comes from God. Gold is the God has. So you've taken something that God says it is mine, and you have polluted the gold. You have polluted my gold. Spiritually speaking, what are we having to do in our spiritual life before we can enter into the kingdom of God? We have been tried in the fire that does consume, but after the end, there is purification and pure gold. Okay? So keep this in mind, that gold represents you and me, silver represents you and me, and it has to be purified, has to be cleaned up. In this particular case, Moses didn't use fire, but he did use fire to melt it down, right? He melted all down, but he didn't instead of he mixed it with in the water, and people had to partake of gold in their drinking water. Something to think about, isn't it? This is just not a half. I understand what you're saying. They made an idol out of it. But stop. Gold belongs to God. All of it belongs to God. I have some gold. I actually own gold. How many of you have earrings and gold? You have gold. You own it. By the way, you don't. It belongs to God. He can take it back anytime he wants. Physically.
Yeah, but this doesn't say gold. It says the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof.
But I'm just telling the phrase what he said in the prophecy. All the gold is mine and all silver is mine. And most people have no idea what that means. He's not talking about the physical gold. He's not even talking about the physical earth. He's talking about something quite different. Gold, when it comes completely purified, is purified. Yes.
It's also a prophecy because he starts out with us being dirt. And then he is going to turn us into gold. Mm-hmm. So in a sense, he was showing what was going to happen.
We will be changed from dirt into something. We'll be changed into gold. We'll be changed into gold, but we have a lot of fire to go through if we get there. Okay. Now, the phrase is, Moses the man. Shows up quite often in prophets, in the Torah section. They always called him the man. Who was the first person who called him the man?
Pharaoh.
Pharaoh was the first person that called Moses the man. The Isha. The one that has tremendous amount of power and authority. And so when I used the phrase last week, I says, we walk up and says, you're the man. You should say, no, I'm not. I'm not the man. I'm not Moses. I'm just Autumn. I'm just man. I'm nothing. Moses had power, tremendous amount of power. Keep this part in mind. Did the people of Israel... Let's go back farther. Did the people of Egypt see the hand of God do the destruction? Who did they see had the power to destroy them? Moses had the power to destroy him. He's the man that has the power to destroy. Now, as time goes by, these Israelites... Oh, wow. What did they see in the journey going into Mount Sinai? Did they see the power of God? Did they see the power of God split the water apart? Did they see the power of God hit the rock and water come out? Who did they see? They saw Moses. They saw Moses, the man. He had power. You think God did not give him power? We think, oh, no, he didn't. He was just a human being. And he pleaded to God, and he said, okay, God, what are we going to do here? And, of course, God told him to do, pick up the stick and hit it. Oh, all right. Bam. Out comes water. Pick up the stick and separate the water. There it is. Do you think the people were seeing the hand of God? No, they were not. When did the people come to realize that there is a power far greater than Moses? At the mountain. Moses wasn't up there talking to them. He was down there with them, right? And this terrifying power spoke to them. And they were so frightened, so scared, so fearful, they couldn't move. They couldn't talk back. They didn't have time to think. They were in a state of what we would call today, God was a terrorist to them. He terrorized them so much that their mind couldn't wander. Now, a test had to take place. Okay? You heard what I said. I'm going to test you out for 40 days. Let me ask you a question. What was the first commandment? You shall have no other Elohim before me. And you shall not, what? And you'll make no what? No graven image, nothing in the earth, above the earth, any place, nothing whatsoever. So what did people do? They broke the laws really quick. Less than 40 days. Now, of course, you would never do that because you're full of wisdom and understanding and hindsight that's so awesome. You would never think about ever saying, whatever happened to Moses? He's disconnected from us. He's gone someplace else. He ran away. He's just gone. Wait, Aaron, we need help. Aaron, we need a God. Aaron, we need, show us. Aaron, we need something to show us where to go. Where were they? They're in the land of Hodah. Where are they going to go? They needed a leadership. So who did they turn to? Well, they turned to Aaron. Right? Why did they turn to Aaron for? Okay, God said to Moses, I am going to make you a Elohim. And I'm going to make Aaron the prophet. Did that occur? Yes or no? Yes. After Egypt, was that null and void? Was Moses no longer an Elohim in the eyes of the Israelites? Was Aaron no longer a prophet in the eyes of the Israelites? Remember that prophetically speaking here, when he uses Aaron as a prophet, he's really talking about he represents a real prophet that's going to come. Now we think of the man, Aaron, as, okay, he wasn't a good guy. He lied here. He didn't follow God there. He's weak here. Yeah, you've seen the man, Aaron, weak. But did you see Jesus ever weak? Did Jesus ever back down? He took a whip. Remember? And they couldn't bring charges against him. They're terrified to bring charges against him. Today we say, throw him in court, throw him in jail, he hit somebody. Back then, they didn't touch him. So we have a picture here of two particular people, of Aaron, who did not do something. He did not retrain. And Moses said that whoever is with Yahweh hath him come, and all the sons of Levi gather themselves together unto him. What did the Levites do?
Oh, just was saying about Yeshua. It's quite interesting that Pilate, in a sense, was speaking prophetically when he said, "Behold the man."
Cool. I didn't think about that. Good statement. Good statement. But anyway, let's get back here. Now, what did the Levites do? What a killing. They were the executors. Why was it important for the Levites to do this?
Essentially, they were supposed to be the role models. They were of the priestly house.
Okay.
Right? So if a country or a nation has bad leaders, then the people are going to be bad. You do what your leadership does.
Okay. Interesting approach.
The Levites were the teachers. They were traditionally always taught everybody. The priesthood.
Mm-hmm. Now, did they know that? Go ahead.
Well, this kind of fortitude was kind of a family trait, too. It was in the history of their father. You know, Simeon and Levi.
Okay. Here we see sometimes when you in your world, me in my world, we can go back from many years ago, many, many years ago, and something takes place in your world, and, well, what's this all about? And 20 or 30 years later says, oh, Now I know why that happened in my life. God had over here for me to be here. I couldn't get here if He didn't put me there in the first place. Most of us believe, I hope, that God really has a say-so in our lives. Tell you the honest truth, He has complete say-so in our lives. Now, Levites were going to become, they were not yet, L.A., teachers. They were not yet appointed yet. That's in the book of Numbers. We'll get there when the book of Numbers comes. It would tell you that the Levites, it would appear that not a single Levite was involved in any of this which took place. And the building of the calf and putting it together. So, I got one, it's there. No. I told you last week, yes, he's responsible. It's what the people wanted and demanded. They wanted God. Moses was disconnected from them. And when you disconnect Moses from them, you disconnect the Creator of heaven and earth from them. Because that's who he represented. God has disconnected us. Well, he didn't say that, but in a sense, that's the purpose behind it all.
Interesting in Jacob's blessing of his sons, Levi and Simeon, but Levi, he says, you are vessels of Hamas, which is violence. They really were here vessels of violence. They went through and killed 3,000 of the men. It's a violent thing, but God used them prophetically for justice.
In a sense, we use that. I hate to use the word violent because that kind of makes it. In my person, when I look back upon the life of Levi and Simeon, what they were doing, they were carrying out an execution without the authority of their father for something that happened to their little sister. Wasn't a grown teenager even. She was a little sister. Not even of age yet. We would consider women of age. But that's another story.
But justice in both cases.
Yes. Because what did Levi and Simeon say to his father? Our sister becoming a harlot because of this. We ain't going to accept it. Now, you may disagree, but that's okay. This is what they're saying. This is what they said.
Well, Levi goes on later to bring justice too by the sacrifices. So again, he's administering leveling of the playing field by justice.
I want to go to verse. I want to try to get at least this chapter finished. I want to go to verse 30. Verse 30. Yes. Now remember. Took 50 days to get to where? Mount Sinai. Now, from a given point, which I don't have the date on, I have a guessing point on, I'm not going to go there. Now, there's another 40 days added to the 50 days. Oh, that's getting down there, isn't it? So we're not in springtime anymore, are we? Not in Chaparral anymore either. We're getting summertime right now, and it's heading towards something much greater. Much greater. Verse 30, very, very fascinating. Verse 39 first. Consider yourselves today talking to the people and the Levites. This is a very important statement that Moses says because God said no. We'll get there. Consecrate yourself today to Yahuwah that He may bestow upon you a blessing this day. What day that is, I do not know. After He did the killing, He had to do the burying, He had to do all that kind of stuff, and maybe take it a week or 2 weeks to do the job, I do not know. I didn't come close to the guessing on it. But whatever that day is very fascinating. I would like to know, but God says you don't get to know. It's not important. And He says, a blessing for every man has opposed his son and his brother. In other words, it was like an execution. There was an execution taking place. There was blood. It was not a civil war. It was execution. It was really nasty. You don't think it was nasty? It was nasty. Moses was mad. Anger. And now it came to pass, verse 30, on the next day, so this day he consecrated himself, the next day Moses said to the people, you have committed a great sin. Listen to what he said. So now I will go up to Yahuwah, perhaps I can make a an atonement for your sins. Whew. Are we coming close to the fall? Are we coming close? Moses now is, and we will see, is ready to present himself as the sacrifice for all the sins and iniquities. What a man. What a man. Take upon himself. Did he know something we didn't know? We'll find out something that Moses said to God. And so he went there. So he returned to Yahuwah. He said, all these people that have committed a great sin, they have made themselves an Elohim of goat. Yet now, if you will forgive them, forgive their sins, but if not, blot me out of your book, which you have written. He's willing to have his eternal life gone for the sake of the people. Does that show that Moses was an unrighteous man? Far outnumbers me, I'll tell you, by 1,000, 2,000, I mean percentage. I can't go high enough. To infinity of percentage. He's quite a man, isn't he? So in a lot of ways, he does serve the title, the man.
Richard, it's probable, I suppose, that when Moses was up with God initially, when he gave the Ten Commandments, he came down glowing. And we know at the end of Moses' life, he says, God will send a prophet like me.
Yep.
You will listen to him.
Now,
you know why? Right. He must have known that he was a prefiguration
of
the Messiah.
Moses did not know that yet. The reason why he said that, because he didn't know that yet. He did not know that yet. I'm not going to get to the 34th chapter at all. God help me. Okay, so he wanted to blot him out. And God said, oh, wait a minute now. He said, no, that's not going to happen. Whoever sin he is me, I am going to blot him out of my holy book. Then Yahweh plagued. And he got the people that the Levites missed. Doesn't say how many, just he sent a plague amongst the house of Israel. Chapter 33, I'm going to get into 33. Oh, God help me. I'm running out of time already. But here God, Moses is up there and he says, and God says, I'm going to depart. And go up from here, you and the people whom you have brought out of Egypt, and take them to the land that I promised Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And I will send my angel before you to deliver out the Canaanites and so on and so forth on down the line. And here Moses is begging him. Literally begging him. I can't. You've got to hear me. You've got to take us there. You've got to take us there. Now, Yahweh is still speaking. Because verse 4, it says that when the people heard this, that God was not going to lead them into the promised land, but he was going to send his angel, what did the people do? What was the response? The people heard this, bad news. That's what that word is, bad, not evil. Some of you translate it as evil. It's a bad word translated evil, it's not evil. The word is bad news. And they mourned. No one put on his ornaments. That's a kind of afterthought because later on, we see in the verse 5, and Yahweh said unto Moses, say to the children of Israel, you are stiff-necked people. I could come up unto your midst in the moments and consume you. Now therefore, take off your ornaments. Take them off. I may know what to do. Remember Moses said, consecrate yourself. Make yourself clean. Good clothes on. And God says, give off! I don't see that. He was mad. And he says, then I have to figure out what I'm going to do with you. Now, do you think God put fear in the people again? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And the children of Israel stripped themselves of their ornaments by Mount Horeb, because they couldn't go to Mount Sinai. And of course it says here, this is an afterthought, the tent came through and they're more in the meeting and so on and so forth, that only Moses could go there and no one else out there. No one can come near the tabernacle of the meeting at all. And so now we go on to I'm going to drop down real quick to verse 12. I'm going to try to end this thing in a couple minutes. Then Moses said unto Yahuwah, see, you say to me, this is Moses talking now, bring up this people, but you have not let me know whom you will send with me. Yet you have said, I know you by name, means you have given me the name. God gave him the name Moses, not the woman who pulled him out of the waters. And you have also found grace, we won't go into that word today, in my sight. Therefore, I pray, I have found grace in your sight. Listen to verse 13. This is what I'm saying. Moses did not know the story yet. Show me now your way. You mean you don't know the way of God? No, he did not know the way of God. That I may know you, and that I may find grace in your sight. And consider this. That this nation of yours, your people. And then he said, okay, I'll present myself before you. But no one else. No one else is going to see what you're going to see. Moses said, verse 18, please show me your glory. We'll get into that next week. Can't get it in today. I will make my goodness, here Yahuwah said, pass before you, and I will proclaim the name of Yahuwah before you, so you know that's me, not somebody else. And I will be gracious to whom I will be gracious, and I will have compassion upon whom I will have compassion. You cannot see my face. No man, not even you, will see me and remain alive. I will place you in a place. I want you to stand on a rock. I will stand on a rock, cut a rock, and I'm going to put you into a cave. I can put you someplace, and I'm going to put my hand over your face. And then I'm going to turn around. Then I'm going to move my hand, and you're going to see my behind. Literally. Not just his, I mean his whole backside. We understand that, but you're going to see his backside. His whole backside. Do you know what it looked like? You know, God, Moses could not describe this at all. Now, we go on to chapter 34, which I'm going to have to do next week. Very, very important chapter 34. Incredibly important chapter 34. Any questions? Any ideas? Any thoughts? Any inputs? Why I think, this is Richard now speaking, why I think it's so very important to take a really close look at the man Moses. Because God spent more time with him than anybody else. He showed him more than anybody else. He taught him more than anybody else. And if we don't understand Moses, what happened in his life, what was going on, what God was saying to him, none of us can ever understand the New Testament at all. It's a foreign world, foreign concept, has no bearing on our lives if we don't understand the Song of Moses. Yes? One of these days I will get into the New Testament. There's certain places in the New Testament which I know the Christian world has a phrase and statements on, and I've been trying my very best not to voice them very strongly. But I will be doing it very soon after I get past the 34th chapter. And I know the Christian world, I'm not anti-Christian, I'm just anti-teaching of the belief systems that have taken words and they use phrases and they have no idea what Apostle Paul is talking about.